This is Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, here's Gary and Rob.
Good Monday to you, Rob Hernandez. Gary D'Amato with you here on Talking.Golf. Time to kick off another week, a week that's got a great deal of promise, Gary. We've got guys playing golf on the PGA Tour Champions, the PGA Tour. We'll talk later about an interesting pairing on a tour called the Outlaw Tour. But everybody's tour, the golf being played in your own backyard, is starting to kind of get underway back in Wisconsin where you are. It had to feel good seeing golf courses open and maybe, just maybe, an early start to the season.
Yeah, I guess I was pretty cool. Originally, Rob, when we talked about a month ago when we thought courses might open, I think I said March 12th, so, and you said right around then too. So we weren't that far off. I kind of worried when we got that big snowfall, but as it turns out, we had a great weekend. The snow is almost all gone. You know, I just went to my bank, and there's still a huge mound, you know, where the snowplow has piled it up. But other than that, we had a great weekend, and I would anticipate, hopefully, being able to play a lot of golf courses in a week or two.
Well, and we had a whole bunch open over the weekend, mostly in southeast Wisconsin. Big Oaks Golf Course in Pleasant Prairie was the first to open on Friday. Browns Lake in Burlington, Muskego Lakes in Muskego, Spring Valley, which you wrote about last year in Salem. And then, of course, Evergreen Country Club in Elkhorn, which is almost always one of the first to open. They opened on Sunday, yesterday. And then a couple of the Milwaukee County courses, Lake Park and Lincoln Park, open. And we keep waiting for more. But, Gary, as you mentioned before we came on the podcast to me, you've seen snow in a lot of places. And I think it's a credit to a lot of the superintendents not to send golf traffic out too early when there's still snow and potentially frost, potentially ice on the greens, those kind of things. You don't want to damage the course before you really get into the throes of the season.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Rob. I drove past Grant Park in South Milwaukee, and I expected it to be open because Grant is one of the first courses normally, especially in the county system, to open. And there were a lot of guys hitting golf balls in a little field across the street, but the course wasn't open yet. So I would expect Grant to open any day now, too.
On our list at Wisconsin.Golf, you can check it out. We'll continue to update it as we get word from the courses. There's also an email address on there for those golf courses that might be tuning into the podcast that didn't get my email that I sent out last week. But as soon as you make the decision to let the golfers out, let us know. We'll add you to the list. And we've got links to the golf courses, phone numbers to call where you can make tee times. And we've also got a lot of the upscale courses around the state that weighed in. They kind of set their openings, Gary, well in advance. And the Kohler courses figure to be open by April 24th, but Michael O'Reilly from the Kohler courses told me that the Irish course and the original championship course at Black Wolf Run will open as soon as the weather permits. And that's always a neat little tradition they've started up there. It's not the river course. It's not the Meadow Valleys course at Black Wolf Run, but they have kind of the original rotation from when they first opened, and that's usually the first collection of holes to open each year, and a chance for those that were that played Black Wolf back when it first opened to play the original course. That's kind of neat.
It is neat, and that's actually the course that was used, I believe, for both U.S. Women's Opens in 98 and 2012. So, yeah, you can play that championship course, and I try to do that. I've done that a couple times in recent years just because it's so much fun to get up there and you're itching to play golf, and what better place to play than the championship course at Black Wolf Run. So hopefully I can get up there again and do that this year, Rob.
Well, we've also got University Ridge will open on April 17th, Erin Hills, Century World, May 4th. Actually, the golf course of Lasonia are supposed to open on April 1st. So a lot for the golfers to look forward to, but again, keep checking back to Wisconsin.Golf, and we will update you as we can. Gary, one thing I want to touch on to start our podcast is talking about the PGA Tour Champions. I had a chance to go out to Newport Beach Country Club to see Jerry Kelly on Friday in the first round. It was one of the more bizarre rounds I've ever seen Jerry Kelly play. He started out with three straight birdies, was completely dialed in. It looked like he was going to take it super low. And then the wind started to kick up. He started to me, just kind of maybe lost a little focus on club selection and just on a little bit of uncertainty with the weather. And he winds up finishing, I think, at two over. And it kind of sums up his year. He's had moments where it looks like the Jerry Kelly of old, but then he reverts back. And, you know, it's just – it's hard to maintain your status on the tour of that nature at that age. And, well, heck, at any age, we'll talk about it in a minute, too, how the health of other players that are on the regular tour has kind of been a topic of headlines. But relevant to Jerry Kelly, it just seems like he's had a hard time getting going here this spring.
Has he mentioned anything about injuries, Rob? We're going to talk about that a little bit here, but he struggled, you know, in recent years with various ailments, as many golfers, you know, in their 50s do. Did he mention anything about anything hurting on him?
He honestly, and he didn't have a lot to say after the round. I wound up, his son Cooper was walking along with Jerry's wife Carol and Cooper's mom, and he has just come back from an abbreviated study abroad because of the coronavirus. So after I saw Jerry's game kind of go south, I knew it was coming, and that was a very short post round interview, as you know.
Yes.
When Jerry's not happy, Jerry's not happy. So nothing related to injuries, and I, you know, I talked to Carol and I talked to Cooper, and you know, I mean, this is going back to the end of the Schwab Cup last year. You know, Jerry was in pretty good shape, and when I talked to Jerry just before Christmas, he was looking forward to this year because it was going to be the first year where they really entered the year without, you know, too many things on, you know, that were bothering him. And the things that were identified as kind of holding him back right now were really the short game around the green, chipping, putting. I know he switched putters at the Cola Guard for a couple rounds and switched back. So right now it's in that, you know, kind of that scoring zone and that red zone where you're trying to you know, where you're trying to score, and, you know, he has not been able to get up and down as much as maybe he has in the past. And he had a lot of quizzical looks on his face after a couple of chips checked up at Newport Beach. But again, this is, you know, the conditions out here with the POA greens and that kind of thing, sometimes it can be very difficult to, you know, gain a rhythm in and around the greens. And when you're struggling coming in, it can make it even worse. So I think that might be part of the problem. But he hasn't he kind of had moments over the weekend. It was a little bit smoother. I think he shot 68-70 over the weekend and made a bit of a move. But not enough to really dent, you know, make a dent on the leaderboard. And he wound up finishing tied for 43rd. But he has not, you know, that's just not the range we've been used to with Jerry Kelly, Gary, since he turned 50. And, I mean, he's been, you know, not only consistent, but consistent in terms of top 15 finishes throughout most of his time on the Champions Tour.
Yeah, he's been almost like a top 10 machine, you could almost say. I mean, so it's puzzling to see him get off to this start, especially if there's no underlying health issues. And I would assume if there was, he'd have told you about it by now, because I know you've seen him several times now in the last month or so. But yeah, I find it very puzzling. Certainly, you don't suddenly lose your game when you go, you know, when you go from 52 to 53 or 53 to 54. It's more of a gradual process. So this might just be a blip, Rob. He might figure something out with his chipping, make a few putts, and all of a sudden, you know, he's shooting 68s and 67s again.
I agree. And again, at that age, you know, games come and go, you know, quite frequently. He wasn't the only one struggling over the weekend. You know, Kirk Triplett, who, you know, has had great success, you know, was a little bit up and down, had a great second round. Scott Parel, you know, just kind of, you know, on the outside, you know, looking in. Bernhard Langer, you know, tied for 31st, and you know, he looked real solid in winning you know, a week ago. So there's a lot of guys, and I think it speaks to the competition level on that tour that it just keeps getting better and better. And we had a first time winner in the Champions Tour in Ernie Els, and you know, Ernie just turned 50, and I tell you what, he looks like he's settled in, and he may be another one of those guys that you can add to Scott McCarron and Bernhard Langer that are just going to get better with age, and he really seems to enjoy himself. And at his size and with his ability to drive the golf ball, Gary, I think Ernie Els could be a really, really popular guy in that Champions Tour.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you, Rob. There's, you know, Ernie's got every bit of the game, obviously, to be a superstar out there on the Champions Tour. The one thing that's maybe held him back in recent years has been his putting. But the greens are a touch slower on the Champions Tour and maybe quite not as undulating as the greens you find on the PGA Tour. So, you know, if he puts really well, he's going to win a lot of tournaments out there. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
And we've seen things kind of go in cycles too, with you know, guys playing well, and then with you know, we've written about the fact that Ernie is the start of a really decorated rookie class coming in this year. KJ Choi, Mike Weir are turning 50 in February. I'm sorry, in May, as is Jim Furyk, and it was just announced over the weekend that Jim Furyk and his wife are going to be starting a Champions Tour event similar to Steve Stricker down in Florida on the 2021 schedule. So that's you know, great news for that tour. And then you've got you know, potentially Phil Mickelson, who could play in some of the Senior Tour majors already this year. So there's a lot of excitement coming here on the Champions Tour. And you know, and that doesn't even, you know, begin to, you know, address the fact that the other thing that is in play here is with the 78 player fields, you get guys that don't have status who all of a sudden, you know, have a great week. Glenn Day did it here over the weekend. He is not exempt. He does not pop up on the field. Sometimes he's got to get in as alternate. He's in a lot of the Monday qualifiers because he doesn't sometimes get in the initial 78, and he got in at Newport Beach and made the most of it, and shooting 65-64 in the weekend to finish two shots behind Ernie Els in a tie with Fred Couples, who was playing well. And again, most years, Fred Couples, you know, I mean, there have been a couple of years, Gary, where he hasn't played more than once or twice when he comes to Madison, including the year he won it.
Yeah, every year, Rob, there's one or two guys who discover the fountain of youth, and maybe they didn't have a great PGA Tour career, and they get some momentum on the Champions Tour, and all of a sudden, I think Ken Tanigawa is probably a pretty good example of that kind of player. And you mentioned David Moreland. There's it seems like every year there's one or two guys like that who get it going on the Champions Tour, and from week to week, you know, string together top finishes, and all of a sudden you see their name on the leaderboard a lot when you might not have seen their name anywhere for a long time. So that's kind of fun.
And David Moreland was a great story at the Newport Beach event, the Hogue Classic. They had a Tuesday qualifier. The open qualifying was on Tuesday at a course out in Riverside, about a half hour, 45 minutes from Newport Beach Country Club. And it just so happened that day a pretty large wildfire broke out right next to the course. The course had to be evacuated. Fortunately, everybody got in at least nine holes. What they did was they took for the four qualifiers, they took two from the front nine who had finished nine holes in the front, two that had finished nine holes in the back. Moreland wins a scorecard playoff to get one of the final spots, and then comes out and shoots 61 in the opening round, and unfortunately shot 70-71, finished T7. So he's not automatically in the next event, but because of Glenn Day's finish. But again, it goes to the point that there are a lot of guys capable of making some noise in this tour. Robert Carlson, who finished tied for second with Glenn Day and Fred Couples, a former Ryder Cupper from the European side, you know, also has showed flashes of brilliance this year. And all of which, I think, Gary, leads to our next topic. You've got a story coming on Wednesday about the AmFam Championship and some changes coming there that will give the tournament a little bit tighter control. We don't want to, you know, spill the beans too much here, but, you know, the competition for these 78 spots is pretty intense, and I think the AmFam Championship, because of its great success in its first 4 years of existence, 5 years of existence, is probably the symbolic of that. you know, there's a lot of people who want to play at University Ridge in that event.
Yeah, the AmFam definitely has leverage with the PGA Tour champions, and so they've made some changes, and you know, yeah, you're right, we don't want to spill the beans because the story won't be published for a couple days, but it's going to mean a stronger field and a better field for the AmFam, and they you know, that is one of the top two or three tournaments on that tour, not counting the major championships on that tour. So they've got a lot of leverage, and they've requested to make some changes. And it was a collaborative process with PGA Tour champions, and we'll detail those changes in a story Wednesday on Wisconsin.golf.
Bottom line, Gary, is the fact that the AmFam Championship has found a way to make the Senior Tour very successful in its market. And I'm seeing that now spill over into many more. The last two events I've been to, the Charles Schwab Cup Championship in Phoenix, and this last weekend at Newport Beach, the Friday crowd, the one day I was there, was exceptional. And, you know, there's so much going on in the L.A. area that sometimes the PGA Tour Champions becomes an afterthought. But, man, I tell you what, it was a pretty fun event on a Friday for people to come out to, and I think with all these new faces that we're seeing cycle onto the tour, it's only going to get better. So we look forward to reading that. Let's see here. The PGA Tour, more of the talk over the weekend, again, Gary, on that tour, Steve Stricker played at the, what we're calling now the API, the Arnold Palmer Invitational. I heard the API mentioned so often over the weekend on Golf Channel. I didn't realize that was a thing, but at the API, it wasn't so much who won the tournament, but who survived the tournament. I think the leading score after like two rounds was at 7-under, and the winning score was 4-under, a.k.a. the wind won the weekend again, Gary. It just seems like, I know in Hawaii, after you left, we've talked about this, the wind kicked up and made both the Sony Open and the Century Tournament of Champions quite an adventure for the golfers out there. I thought the conditions on the West Coast swing were probably tougher than normal, especially at Torrey Pines and again up at the Pebble Beach Pro-Am. But down at Bay Hill over the weekend, you don't see it very often. Terrell Hatton shoots 73-74 on the weekend and wins by one over Mark Leishman. And Rory McIlroy, who was in position going into the final round, shoots a 4-over-76 and finishes T5. You don't see scores like that on the PGA Tour very often among the at the top of the leaderboard, do you?
Rob, you don't even see scores like that in a major championship anymore. I mean, the U.S. Open now is getting to 10, 11, 12 under. And the PGA Championship and the Open Championship, the Masters, when conditions are right, those guys take it deep everywhere now. So, yeah, highly unusual scoring. And, Rob, I'm going to be devil's advocate here. Of course, the wind plays a huge factor. It's the one thing that really can bother guys on the PGA Tour. They can handle every kind of condition, but when the wind blows, it makes it tough on those guys because it introduces a lot of doubt in where they want in their lines, in their club selections, their yardages, all that stuff. But I just wonder, with all this talk, Rob, about, you know, the Distance Insights project with from the USGA and RNA, and all this talk about players hitting the ball too long and courses being rendered obsolete, and what are we going to do about the future of the game? I just wonder if the tour has made some subtle changes in the way that courses are set up to make scoring a little more difficult. And maybe I'm going way out on a limb here, but maybe it's totally wind. I don't know, but let's put it this way. It wouldn't surprise me if that was a little bit of a factor here.
Well, and I'll agree with that because I saw rough at Torrey Pines. Torrey Pines played more like a U.S. Open course than it did a Farmers Insurance Open course. Yeah. And it wasn't like the scores were exceptionally low, but they also, you know, were much higher than what you're used to, especially because the North course, they, you know, has become so much tougher with the Tom Weisskopf redesign. And I think, you know, I'd like to, that might be a great topic when you get down to Augusta, because I think the eye test, Gary, I looked at what I saw of the API over the weekend, and I saw both fairways and greens that looked very brown, which tells me firm, fast, and maybe too fast. We saw the little I watched of the Arnold Palmer Invitational. I saw saw Rory McIlroy hit a drive on Sunday, about 349 yards, I think they measured it, and it hit in the fairway, kicked into the rough. And again, that's one where if he draws it a little bit, you know, then he's, you know, probably, you know, walking away with a birdie, and instead he's scrambling to make a par. So I think you're right. I think ultimately the PGA Tour, in conjunction with the ultimate commissioner on that tour, God, is really, you know, making things challenging. And I find the, you know, the whole timing of the scores that we're seeing very coincidental with, you know, all the fuss over the distance report that was released here a couple months ago.
Yeah, all I'm going to add to that, Rob, is that the greens at Bay Hill looked browner than I can remember ever them looking. And what, you know, I'm not sure the factors behind that. I don't know what the weather's been like down there, and I don't know how much water they've been throwing on those greens. But they, I remember those greens being sort of green in the past, and they look pretty tannish this past weekend.
Well, we'll see if that carries through to the Players Championship this week. One of the headlines already from that event is the fact that Tiger Woods won't be playing. His back's not in good enough shape yet for that. And that was what worried me. I've told you this. I think I told you this down when we were talking down at Chicago at the golf show, that you know, I always look to see Tiger and some of these guys walk in the media room, the ones that have kind of, you know, blazed the trail with fitness in golf. And Tiger looked a little stiff again this year, walking into the his debut at Torrey Pines. And sure enough, the back must be as fragile as it looked when he walked in for his interview. And he will not play this week. That's not a good sign for the PGA Tour. And again, it goes back to how much fitness is too much fitness in the game of golf?
Yeah, that's a good question, Rob. Something we talked about before we started the podcast here a little bit when we talked to each other. You know, I think part of it, Rob, and when you look at the guys who swing really hard at it, you look at Jason Day, who's been hurt a lot, you look at Tiger, who's been hurt a lot, these guys are trying to swing the club 125 miles an hour now when maybe 30 years ago, the average club head speed was probably not much more than 105, I would say. So guys are trying to hit it 330 yards in the air now. And, you know, after swinging that way for weeks and months and hundreds of thousands of swings, it's like the knee in football. You know, the knee isn't meant to play football, and the back is not meant to swing a golf club at those excessive speeds. So these guys are trying to get in shape to be able to handle that kind of torque and force on their bodies, but sometimes maybe it's just too much.
Well, and Jason Day had to withdraw last weekend from the Arnold Palmer as well, and he's another one that just, you know, for a guy of, you know, his age and his fitness level, you just don't expect to see them walking gingerly, and that's so we'll see. And Rory McIlroy is another one that I think we got to keep an eye on because he is so strong. So far, knock on wood, we haven't seen too much in the area of sustained injury, you know, delaying or compromising his career. But you know, that's a fine line that these guys are having to walk. Players Championship, Gary, kind of kicks off what I consider to be the major championship season. It's you always the strongest field in golf, and one of the funnest weeks of the year because of the 17th hole at the TPC Sawgrass. What do you like best about the Players, and what does the Players do for you in terms of getting your excitement level for golf going each calendar year?
Well, you know, I try to watch a lot of golf, obviously, especially January, February, and March when the weather isn't so great and you're sort of a captive audience. So the golf is on quite a bit on the weekend, but the Players is something I try to watch if I can, you know, the telecast from start to finish, or I'll tape it and go back and watch it. It's just so much fun watching that tournament. I love what happens on the 17th hole. I still, every once in a while, think back to when Jerry Kelly was in contention. Boy, was that like 2002 maybe?
Yeah.
And that's when Tiger made that bomb on much better than the rest of them or whatever, whatever was said on the telecast. But, yeah, I just love watching what happens on that. The whole finishing stretch there, not just 17, 18 is a brutal hole too. And it's so much fun to watch because we're getting ready to go outside and play golf if we haven't already, and that just piques my interest 1,000%.
No, I agree, and it also gives us a glimpse as to, you know, after all the work that's been done on the West Coast and now on the start of the Florida swing, you know, whose game is going to be in prime position to maybe go after a major championship or two. And, you know, some years, I mean, I go back to Jordan Spieth a couple of years ago, another guy whose star has kind of shown, you know, much brighter a couple of years ago than it is right now. But he was at a stage in his career where, you know, he could win every major, and which is kind of what we saw with Tiger for so many years. And I don't know if we've got a guy like that. I mean, Brooks Koepka struggled. He had a rough go of it with an 81 at the API over the weekend, and one of his highest scores as a professional. So there just isn't anybody out there right now, Gary, that I you know, that's a lead pipe cinch to be you know, someone that could maybe even win multiple majors this year. Which, when's the last time we haven't been able to say that? Rory McIlroy maybe, but you know, as we saw over the weekend, even he's you know, human and has his you know, his challenges.
Yeah, it's literally, I mean, it's tough enough to, it's very difficult to pick a winner week to week on the PGA Tour, but it's become almost impossible. Look at the winners we've seen this year. Some of them you'd never suspect or pick as winners going into the week. So, which makes it kind of fun, although I wish, you know, it won't be too long, I don't think, before we start seeing what's wrong with Brooks Koepka stories. Some of those guys, you know, I mean, it's they have four or five bad weeks in a row, and all of a sudden the sky is falling. But, you know, he's had that knee issue, Rob, and you just wonder how much that has played into what's going on with him. Jordan Spieth, some of these guys I just hope make comebacks of some sort so that we have some really strong play from these guys going into the Masters and the majors. And as far as Tiger Woods, boy, you worry about his back just a few weeks out from the Masters. It would be just a shame if he wasn't able to try to defend his title there. So a lot going on that way, yeah.
Well, and finally, it all leads into maybe the big news of the day that was released in an email that I got at 4 a.m. from the PGA Tour. They have finally announced that the TV rights package that has been negotiated now for many, many months is complete, and beginning in 2022, not much changes. On the one hand, CBS and NBC still remain as the main network TV partners for the PGA Tour. But some interesting things going forward, Gary. I think the two biggest headlines for me that PGA Tour Live, which is currently a part of the NBC Gold package, will revert to the Disney ESPN Plus package. And over 4,000 hours of golf annually. I've seen bits and pieces of PGA Tour live. Mark Wilson, obviously the former Wisconsin golfer, is a part of the coverage of that now. And so if that can somehow get on the same package that I've got here with the kids in this Disney deal with you know, all these shows that monopoly is providing on the streaming package, I'll be all for it. By the way, the deal reported in the neighborhood of $680 million. The other thing that really piqued my interest, Gary, was that it was a deal negotiated in a strategic partnership, they called it, with the LPGA Tour. That, to me, is maybe where the future of golf is in a lot of events where you might have, you know, mixed fields. We saw that on the European Tour with an event, the Vic Open, where you had the women and the men in the same tournament setting, different tournaments, obviously. They're not playing head-to-head, but in the same TV coverage. I thought that was very fascinating to be able to showcase the best of the men and the best of the women over on the European Tour.
Yeah, Rob, you know, the when you get past the major championships, the World Golf Championships, the FedEx playoffs, and a couple other tournaments, Memorial maybe and Arnold Palmer, really there's, you know, half the tour is events that to some degree struggle for viewership, struggle for sponsors, struggle for people on the golf course. So I think some of those events would be prime candidates to have to really change up their formats a little bit, have some fun, introduce maybe some LPGA players, and as you say, some kind of mixed team event, or, you know, have women in the field playing from different tees, but going right up against the men. So I think the tour is ripe to experiment with that. And one more thing I'll say about that TV contract, Rob. I think the tour is very wise to get that done early in the game because they still have a couple years left on their original contract or their old contract. And viewership is changing the way people view events and how they get their information and how they watch events is changing so fast that I think it was very wise for the tour to lock this down this early, just in case 4 or 5 years down the road, people are watching golf differently.
Well, they'll be watching differently this week. I know when I talked to Mark Wilson at the Palm Springs tournament, he was mentioning that the PGA Tour Live, the big thing going on this week is every shot of every player at the Players' Championship. And again, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You know, we all have the golfers we follow, and it may, you know, it's similar to, you know, some of these streaming packages that you've got for high school sports and college sports, you know, where it's, you know, very much some of these are niche audiences. And you could say that the guy who's, you know, 125th on the FedEx Cup point standings is a niche audience. You know, he's got a following somewhere in the world, and now this is going to cater to that with the ESPN Plus package with the PGA Tour Live. But you also have the part I like, Gary, is that we're not reinventing the wheel. I like tournaments that are broadcast on CBS and NBC much more than I do Fox. And it's, again, to take nothing away from Fox and the USGA package, but you know, they aren't there every week. I do think there are things that I'm seeing with CBS, especially that I that represent maybe you know, going backwards a little bit. You know, so I'm not totally on board with everything that the two major networks are doing. But anything that's kind of run through the Golf Channel seems to have a degree of credibility to it because they seem to be the most tuned into golf. Now, that said, I'm a big fan of Shane Bacon on Fox Sports. He's a good competitive golfer himself. And if we could ever crack the Jack Buck, Joe Buck niche there with the with him in the tower, you know, not that Joe's bad, and again, you know, they have a lot, you know, Nance, you know, and has always been a golfer, so he brings some you know, knowledge, and Dan Hicks has become, you know, very, very smooth, but you know, Joe Buck is just that guy that, you know, you either love him or hate him, and I don't quite love him yet, so I guess I'm in the other category. I don't know what you think, Gary.
You know, I'm not. I know a lot of people, especially in Wisconsin, especially when you start talking Packers, people think Joe Buck hates the Packers. You know, I don't think he hates the Packers, first of all, but he's grown on me a little bit. I wouldn't say I'm a huge Joe Buck fan, but I don't mind him. But you're right, Rob. Most people either seem to really like him or not like him at all. I'm not sure why that is, but. But I'm sort of ambivalent to him. I think he's just okay on golf.
Right, right. And I think they brought him in to kind of, you know, bring that big game mentality to it. He's the face of the network, and I get that. And again, you got to give – I always say you got to give, you know, a network like that, you know, a few years to get its feet wet. And let's not forget, I mean, Fox had, what, no background covering golf before they started covering. Wasn't it the Chambers Bay U.S. Open, or was it a year or two before that? But they haven't been at it long, and it does get better each year.
Yeah, I think they're trying, and I think they are getting better. And I you're right. I think Chambers Bay was the first Open championship that they televised. Of course, they have that USGA package. I think they're getting better. I think they have a way to go, but I think they're improving.
Well, and I think their platform too, you know, allows with FS1, FS2. It does bring some exposure to events that would be overlooked if you tried to squeeze it into what the Golf Channel and CBS and NBC are doing. I mean, they clearly have their hands full with this PGA Tour contract, and especially if we're going to bring the LPGA into it now. You know, I again, you need to have more outlets for golf, and especially in the amateur game. And I'm thankful that Fox is there for that. But you know, I'd like to see more of the Korn Ferry Tour for that matter, you know, I'm comfortable with what they do with the PGA Tour champions, and it'll be interesting to see, like we just said, you know, what they do with the LPGA. There's just so much golf that is out there, and you know, we talked about the you know, the potential for mixed team events again. That you know, remember the old JCPenney? We have a mixed team event going on this week, Gary, as we wrap up the podcast. Neil Johnson from River Falls tweeted out yesterday a couple things that I didn't know. First of all, I had no idea there was an Outlaw Tour. Have you ever heard of the Outlaw Tour, Gary?
Not until I saw his tweet also, Rob. That was the first time I heard of it.
And so Neil Johnson, it's a tour that is basically based in Arizona. It appears to be a sister tour of the Golden State Tour, a golf mini tour here in California where I am. But what made Neil's tweet interesting was that Neil is paired this afternoon here on a Monday in this the first of three rounds in this Outlaw event with the LPGA Tour player Anna Nordqvist, who makes her home in Scottsdale, and as many professional golfers do. But I'm eager to see the scores update for Neil Johnson and Anna Nordqvist, and actually they just did. And on the front nine, holy cow, we've got ourselves a duel, Gary. Neil Johnson, a 531. Anna Nordqvist, a 531. They are currently one shot off the lead with the morning wave. They teed off in the afternoon here, or in the late morning, and they are currently tied for third. How do you like that?
They're feeding off each other, Rob. I love it.
Well, let's see here. Neil Johnson with three birdies and an eagle on the par five eighth, and Anna Nordqvist, five birdies in to get to her 31. Again, this is what's cool. I think there's a lot of potential here, Gary, and maybe Neil Johnson with that one tweet will pioneer some momentum for mixed team events, because I think we could have the mixed team Ryder Cup format. Wouldn't that be great? You take the Solheim Cup, you put the Ryder Cup in a blender, and boom. Come up with the mixed team team competition. But I tell you, Gary, there's so much potential for the game of golf. It's enough to make the head spin, right?
Yeah, I keep hearing people who maybe aren't totally educated saying golf is struggling and it's in a bad place. I tend to think the opposite. It's a niche sport. It always will be. It's not going to get Super Bowl like following, but I think it's healthy in so many ways. And this is really cool to see. Maybe we'll see Neil and Anna in a playoff to win the Outlaw Tour event. That'd be cool.
That would get some attention, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Well, Gary, I guess for now, let's just hope that everybody gets a chance to get out and play some golf this week in Wisconsin as the courses continue to open up. And I hope you get out there too. You got to get those clubs dusted off and get your game in prime shape.
I'm going to try, Rob. I'm going to try like heck. We still have to play together at some point this summer. Don't forget that.
We're going to, our boss John Hughes has a collection of clubs, so I don't have to bring mine back. So I'll find the right set so I can at least hold my own against you this summer. We'll definitely put that on the calendar for June.
All right. Sounds good, Rob.
All right. That takes us to the end of our Talking.Golf podcast here for a Monday. Rob Hernandez with Gary D'Amato. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you again next week.